Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into a really pivotal and honestly quite controversial moment in early Christian history.
That's right. We're looking at session 3 of the Council of Chalcedon, October 13th, 451 CE.
Exactly. And our mission really is to forensically examine the trial and condemnation of Dioscorus of Alexandria. We want to unpack how allegations of, well, procedural irregularities,
And
bias,
maybe even doctrinal injustice.
How those provide a solid historical basis for understanding why the Oriental Orthodox churches ultimately rejected Chalcedon.
And we're digging into the council's own records, expert analyses of them, to find these often overlooked details.
It's pretty surprising stuff. Let's dive in. So session three, it was set up differently, wasn't it?
It really was very unusual. See, normally you had lay imperial officials presiding over the main sessions.
Okay.
But this time, session 3, it was chaired by Bishop Paucasentus of Lilybaeum,
Pope Leo's representative.
his senior rep, yeah. And commentaries on the Acts suggest this was quite deliberate, a strategic move.
Strategic how?
Well, to give the impression that the trial of Dioscorus wasn't just, a show trial run by the imperial powers, make it look more like church business.
Okay. But speaking of fairness, Dioscorus himself faced some challenges getting his side heard, right?
He certainly did. He claimed, for instance, that he was effectively under guard.
Under guard.
By who? By the hallowed magistriani and scholarii, basically imperial officials acting as guards. He said they prevented him from attending.
Or that he was ill.
Right, or suffering from a prolonged illness. But the council, well, they pretty much dismissed these claims, called them pretexts and excuses for causing delays.
And didn't he ask for the imperial officials to be there, arguing his case was bigger than just him?
He did. He argued it was not a private one, but a general one. But that request was denied for this session.
Even though officials were present in other sessions, like session one, where he was already provisionally condemned.
Exactly. It's inconsistent. So after he refused to appear for the third time, they condemned him
Swiftly.
and just framed it as contempt. Simple as that. Pretty much. Which, brings up the idea that maybe the judgment was already decided.
Yeah, tell me about that, the signs of it being prescripted.
Well, like you said, he was already under that provisional sentence from session one.
Right.
But then for session 3, that verdict was sort of retroactively reframed. They claimed it necessitated a fresh trial, it feels
Right.
like they were adjusting the legal narrative as they went.
Manipulating it almost.
It looks that way.
Oh, yeah.
And crucially, when they finally condemned him, there wasn't even a formal reading of specific charges. Often the bishops just gave a bare sentence of deposition.
Just, you're out. No detailed justification needed at that moment.
Apparently not. This kind of procedural flexibility, it strongly suggests the process was adapted to get the result they wanted.
That really highlights the issue of double standards, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Because you compare Dioscorus being condemned immediately for not showing up
Right.
with the case of Bishop Athanasius of Pera. Later on, session 14, he also ignored multiple summonses.
Okay, so what happened to him?
He was granted a fresh retrial.
Wow. Okay, that is a stark difference.
It screams selective application of the rules, doesn't it?
It really does. And beyond the procedures, what about the atmosphere? I hear it was pretty intense.
Oh, intense is putting it mildly. It was chaotic. You had bishops shouting, chanting things like, "Christ has deposed Dioscorus. Christ has deposed the murderer."
Goodness, mob pressure, essentially.
Very much so. And there's this critical detail from a notary, a guy named Aetius. He actually admitted.
What did he admit?
He admitted that sometimes what one man says is recorded and counted as if everyone alike had said it.
Seriously, so the supposed unanimity wasn't always real.
It seems it was often manufactured, a way to show consensus where maybe there wasn't full agreement.
That's quite a revelation. It makes you question a lot of historical records, honestly.
To us, and it points to theology maybe taking a backseat to politics here.
How so?
Well, look at the final condemnation of Dioscorus. The official reasons focused on tyrannical conduct, breaking canonical rules.
But not explicitly heresy.
Pointedly not heresy, no. This was clever, in a way. It allowed bishops, who might have differed on fine points of theology, to unite against him on procedural grounds, political unity.
Okay, but then you have other figures, like Theodoret of Cyrrhus, accused of Nestorian leanings.
Right, or Ibas of Edessa, also accused of Nestorianism.
What happened to them? They weren't deposed like Dioscorus.
No, they were rehabilitated, reinstated after they publicly anathematized Nestorius.
So condemn Nestorius and you're back in, even if you were previously suspect. while Dioscorus gets booted for procedure.
It certainly looks like a selective application of justice, driven more by political alignment, you know, who's on the right side, rather than consistent theological principle.
And canceling the decrees of the Second Council of Ephesus, where Dioscorus had presided, that was politically necessary for Chalcedon.
Crucial, but it created historical knots. How could a council attended by hundreds, including many who were at Chalcedon, be declared totally null and void, especially when many participants were later forgiven? It's contradictory.
So wrapping this up, what does this deep dive really mean for you, the listener?
Well, I think it shows the split, the enduring schism with the Oriental Orthodox, wasn't just about complex dogma.
It was also deeply rooted in how things were handled.
Exactly. A perceived lack of fairness, a feeling that the whole process was compromised by politics, by a power shift.
Which leaves us with a pretty big question to think about, doesn't it?
It does. When we look back at these historical turning points, how much of what we accept as the truth was actually shaped, maybe even dictated, by the powerful forces pulling the strings at that specific moment?
Something fascinating to ponder indeed.